Welcome to our live broadcast for August 11th, 2018. With us is Carly Samish, who will be sharing Love and Transmutation live from Olympia, Washington. She is standing by. Would like to remind everyone, you can send us your email questions to goradiradio@gmail.com. If you would like to remain anonymous, just tell us in the email. Or if you do it through the web form, you could just place the content, type it into the form, and then place just any user at gmail.com. And that will accept the email anonymously. So we'd like to hear questions, comments, and we will go to a Q&A at the end of the talk. So without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to Carly, who is joining us from Olympia, Washington.
Hi, everybody. Thanks, Annabelle. Thanks for having me back. And I'm glad to be sharing this topic with everybody. All right. So talk about transmutation and love. And this is a really big topic, but I wanted to talk about it because transmutation as a practice and also just as kind of a concept is really foundational in the Gnostic work. It provides the basis, the foundation for what ends up becoming a revolution within ourselves, a psychological revolution, a sexual revolution, and an initiatic process that is revolutionary. And so, and transmutation makes it possible. And at the same time, we have to know that love is what makes transmutation really work in a balanced way, I should say. And the Gnostic work itself is ultimately about love, loving the being, loving the essence, and loving the sexual energy itself and understanding what the sexual energy is. So in the talk, we're going to go over different aspects or different levels of understanding the purpose of transmutation. I really want to provide some different perspectives that maybe we've heard before, maybe we haven't heard it all kind of in one place at one time, to understand transmutation from different viewpoints, different perspectives, different angles, and ultimately to feel a motivation to practice it, and to practice transmutation from love, from that feeling of yearning, wanting to connect with the essence, with the being, and not in that kind of mechanical way or fear or with tension, all those kind of pitfalls that we can fall into after doing anything for a long time, doing the Gnostic work for a long time. So I always want to find that new motivation and inspiration. And that's my aim here for the talk. All right, so transmutation, the word transmutation, it means to transform one substance into another. Essentially, it just means to transform one substance into another substance, but it generally implies an elevation in that process. So transforming a substance into something that is a little bit more refined, a little bit more elevated. The sexual transmutation that we know and that we practice from Master Samael is about transforming the raw sexual energy into consciousness. And consciousness, of course, is another huge topic. And whenever I'm teaching about consciousness and talking about it, especially in the more introductory classes, I always say, we're always talking about consciousness. We're the whole aim of this work is about the consciousness, and yet it's kind of impossible to talk about. So we'll talk about that which is impossible to talk about, and say that consciousness, it's the intelligence, the force, the energy that exists in everything. And we know from our practices that consciousness is something that we just have to experience, and we just have to learn the flavor of it, connect with it more, see how we're not conscious, contrast that with in the ways that there is consciousness, we are conscious, and keep working on strengthening that. Master Samael says, through transmutation of the sexual libido, we achieve what some have called to cerebrate the semen and seminate the brain. Okay, so cerebrate the semen. So first of all, when he's talking about semen, he's talking about the male and female sexual essences or sexual substance. So just so that is clear. But he's basically saying to cerebrate, as in like the cerebrum, the brain, cerebrate the semen and seminate the brain. So it is the union, the harmonization of the mind and the vital essence, the creative sexual energy, which then regenerates our brain and all of our brains, not just our intellectual brain, our emotional brain, or our intellectual brain, our physical body, motor instinctive sexual brain is all regenerated with vital energy through transmutation practices. And then just kind of giving you the lay of the land for the talk, I will at the end talk about different transmutation practices, and at the end we'll also do a practice, of course, a guided practice, but I'll explain what I mean when I'm talking about transmutation practices for those of you who may not be totally familiar with that. Okay. So as I was saying, so the transmuted sexual energy as consciousness, it harmonizes our three brains, it harmonizes our internal organs on a physical and an energetic level, and it energizes and harmonizes all of the vital functions of our body on all these different levels. And harmonizing the three brains is really, again, a really important, we can't underestimate what it means to have our mind and our emotion and our actions in harmony. And in a way, how rare that is. And that's something that through our work and through our self-observation practices, we really start to see how what we do, what we say, what we think, and what we feel are often not in sync with each other. In the transmutation practice, because sexual energy and consciousness is inherently unifying, it really does start to give us opportunities to be aligned in that way, and to have our actions be aligned with our thoughts, with our feelings, with our word, and have that be more and more in line with the will of our being. And then also just to expand our understanding or elaborate a little bit on our understanding of sexual energy. In a way, everything is sexual energy, or we could understand all energy, which is all life, all matter, as vital and therefore sexual energy. It's, again, we have to kind of expand our understanding of what sexual energy means, but we see that our lives, our world is built by our vital energy, our sexual energy, our everything that we do, the life that we've made for ourselves, the decisions that we've made, the people in our lives, our work, everything is the sexual vital energy pouring out through us. And so we try to have our lives balanced, of course, and able to be an appropriate vessel for the will of our being, but it's still we're always creating. We're always creating in the world, and sexual energy is what creates. So when we transmute these energies with love, with prayer, with humility, with patience, and with consciousness, then we revolutionize our lives, and the things that we start to create are internal, and we are creating light. We're creating opportunities for more connection, more relationship with our inner being. We are giving birth to virtues and values of the being within ourselves through this internal revolution. Master Samael Onvior in the book Tarot and Kabbalah, he says, no one can self-realize without transmutation. Again, this is just, it's foundational within the Gnostic teachings. And it's amazing that we have this teaching available to us, given out openly from Master Samael, because it is truly, there's no other word for it, it's revolutionary, because it happens just so internally, and we're just completely conditioned as part of our sleep to look to the outside to make sense of things, to feel happy, to feel love, to, you know, feel fulfilled, find meaning, but it's internal. And all of the processes of the work happen to us internally. So I'm going to go into a few of the understandings of why we transmute, or the purposes. So there's a psychological purpose to transmutation. And the clearest way that this can be explained is that sexual energy equals consciousness, or consciousness in a latent state. Transmuted sexual energy is that light of the consciousness. One of the characteristics of consciousness is that it organizes, it unites, unifies, and it clarifies. Or so I guess I should say some of the characteristics of consciousness. It organizes, unifies, and clarifies. Consciousness itself is true compassion, it's true love, because consciousness recognizes itself in all beings. And so it gives of itself in a way that the ego doesn't, that just on a kind of a personality or superficial level, we can't, but the consciousness recognizes that consciousness in other people that we may not relate to, maybe on a personality level or something like that. And the consciousness really has that true compassion and that true love for other beings, and therefore it is unifying in that way. Sexual energy transmuted becomes the light of the consciousness and grows the essence being that free consciousness, the free essence within ourselves that isn't trapped in the conditioning of the ego. The sexual energy that's left to nature that isn't transmuted, that isn't transformed, it just continues to reinforce the egoic patterns or sleep, the conditioning, and that identification with the external. Ultimately, transmutation becomes a way of life. It becomes natural to us. It almost becomes part of like a day-to-day thing, like brushing our teeth, you know, etc. You know, we transmute. We have this kind of a spiritual hygiene that happens on a daily practice, that we start to feel off and we start to feel less harmonized. We start to feel less connected when we're not transmuting. And so that transmutation practice, coming from just that yearning to feel more connected, to feel more light inside, rather than some kind of like pressure or because we feel like we have to do it, obligation, or even out of ambition, like I'm going to become this thing because I transmute, like we're actually going to become less. The more we do the work, we become less attached, we become less needing of external validation. We just go more inward and become more willing to do the work of our being. Combining meditation and transmutation is really important. So meditation instills that discipline, that spiritual discipline, that mental discipline, also gives us mentally and also emotionally really that clear intention to move the sexual energy properly. Meditation also gives us that practice and those skills with concentration, so that we're very clear on what we're doing, the intention is set, the mind is staying concentrated on the practice. Transmutation, in turn, fuels and strengthens the meditation practice and helps to bring about an internal silence and quiet the mind. So Master Samael talks about transmutation as a practice to experience the illuminating void, which is a state when there are absolutely no thoughts occurring in the mind and the mind is perfectly still. So these two practices mutually reinforce each other, meditation and transmutation. For those of us who have been working with these practices, I'm sure you've verified this. There's plenty of meditation practices out there and they're wonderful, but often introducing a little bit of transmutation or a lot of transmutation into the meditation practice all of a sudden makes it a lot easier to focus, a lot easier to be still, to be in the moment, just all the things that we're trying to do with meditation to relax. Likewise, if we're transmuting but we're totally distracted, we're stressed, we're tense, then the energy doesn't really move. The energy just isn't, we haven't created that space, we haven't created that time and that right mindset for the transmutation to be really effective. We want to remember that this work that we do is about elevating our level of being. We become less dense in every sense of the word. We become more subtle, more subtle. Again, that's just it's a fruit of the work that we can't always anticipate or isn't something that we maybe imagine is a goal, but just to be more subtle. When we sit down and meditate, we're tuning into subtler states of consciousness, subtler states of ourselves. We're discovering that which was hidden. And so we need stillness, we need silence, and we need subtlety. And the less dense we become, then the lighter we become, lighter in every sense of the word. So more light as in less darkness, and lighter as in less heavy. And we might feel that. We might feel that when we transmute and for a time, and we just feel lighter. We don't feel as bogged down in the problems, whatever particular issue we were chewing on in our mind, or emotional distress, all those kinds of things. And it's because we're a little bit more refined, where the consciousness is a little bit more active, and the consciousness is beyond that duality of the suffering in the mind. And little by little, this practice, transmuting, becoming more subtle, we become more internalized, which I mentioned before, but this isn't about becoming like, I guess I want to say antisocial kind of thing, or like disconnected from people or disconnected from our lives. It's kind of this paradox that happens where we become more strengthened internally, and yet we're able to become more connected with people on a more authentic level, like I was saying, because the essence, the consciousness recognizes itself in others. And we do this work. One of the three factors that Samael teaches is that sacrifice for humanity, sacrifice with love. And so connecting with people from an authentic aspect, whether it's with words or not, whether it's strangers or people close to us, that is a result of the work. The more we do the work, the more that capacity is there. It's not so much about being more social or less social. Really, it's about true, authentic connection. We also start to appreciate and love silence more and stillness more. And at that same time, in that paradoxical way, able to bring stillness into aspects, times of our lives that are not still, that are very messy or busy or chaotic. We bring that inner stillness, that inner silence. And we're able to speak more because the consciousness is truth, it is courage, it is all those things. And then we're also able to listen more. All of this comes from the consciousness, which is that transmuted sexual energy. There is an alchemical purpose of transmutation, of course, and alchemy, in internal alchemy, is all about creating the internal transformation. We have those medieval alchemist pictures. It's often just pictures of a vessel, or maybe a man standing next to a vessel, and that vessel is ourselves. It is our container. It is our life, and all of the different creatures and colors and phenomenon and things that are happening inside of that vessel is our internal work. The classic alchemy process is about transforming lead into gold. And that is about transforming that lead of the ego into the gold of the spirit, into the gold of the being. And it's also about refining and purifying the mercury. And the mercury is our sexual waters. It is our sexual substance and sexual energy. And it's represented by mercury because mercury physically is that it's quicksilver. As an element, it's always in a liquid state, but it's a metal. It's really interesting. Really interesting kind of element. When the quicksilver is moving, when it's refined, then it's that term for the transmuted sexual substance and energy. And as it moves, because it's that flowing metallic liquid, it moves throughout our systems and it heals us on many levels. It heals our organs through that property of unification, of harmonization. It heals our brain. It gives light to our internal life. Mercury makes perfect sense as the element related to our sexual waters. As an element, even physically, mercury withstands heat or cold without changing its state. So it's not like where water freezes or turns into vapor with heat or cold. Mercury can withstand heat or cold. So that's why old-fashioned thermometers, maybe they even still make thermometers with this, they were made with mercury. So mercury is able to just move. It expands and contracts a little bit, but it doesn't break or totally change substance with heat or cold. And then in mythology, in the Greek and Roman mythology, Mercury or Hermes, as a god, he was the messenger god. And so he could enter into hell and into Hades and the infernal realms and would guide souls who had died down to the realm of the dead. And he could also go up into heaven, up to Mount Olympus and be with the gods. So this is what our mercury is. Our mercury travels, it moves. Ultimately, the mercury is about a pilgrimage of the sexual energy moving toward the heart, moving toward the being. There's a wonderful clue about mercury in a famous pilgrimage trail called the Camino de Santiago in Spain. So Santiago is James, St. James, or Santiago, is the part of the being related particularly with mercury and transmutation. So in this pilgrimage, in this walk, which is about 500 miles throughout northern Spain and I believe part of France, pilgrims walk it. They have for hundreds of years seeking healing, or deeper meaning or just out of devotion. And they walk through this pilgrimage visiting sacred places and then reach the end point is the Cathedral of St. James over in northwestern Spain. And the symbol of this pilgrimage, it's so perfect, is a seashell, and which is, again, another connection to the waters of Mercury. So transmutation makes of us all pilgrims. We're moving, we're traveling, we're sacrificing the comforts of everyday life to find meaning, even if this just means that we sacrifice time out of our day to sit and meditate when we'd rather be doing something else. That is part of our pilgrimage. That is part of our journey, really. And we do it just like physically doing the pilgrimage. We do it out of devotion, out of seeking healing, out of seeking deeper meaning. And like all pilgrimages done out of love and faith, there's not a guaranteed outcome. We don't transmute for the long term, I should say, out of wanting a very particular outcome or wanting it to look a certain way. There's, you know, maybe different egoic influences that come at certain points that may motivate us in a way. But if motivation is false, if it's not from a real just love of the practice and a real faith and just willingness to move into something that is unknown and mysterious, then, you know, the pilgrimage stops. Basically, we stop being the pilgrim. We just, you know, stop making those efforts. So that's an alchemical understanding with the Mercury. Kabbalistically, with transmutation, so this is a really quick, I don't say introduction to Kabbalah, but really quick summary of Kabbalah, I guess. So in the teachings of Kabbalah, humankind has fallen into darkness and we've lost our inherent unity and our connection to God, which is represented by the tree of life. So the tree of life is our being within us, and because of the fall of humankind, we have lost touch with that and the tree is no longer illuminated. We have eaten of the tree of knowledge and lost the sexual energy to external life. That is the fall. We, through many different circumstances as a humanity, over time, we have gradually lost that connection to the tree of life, the inner being, and expelled the energy outward into external life, and so built a world that is external and lost that connection. So the transmutation, where we are intentionally bringing the energy, the sexual energy, inward and upward, connecting it with the heart, feeling devotion, working with prayer, we are starting to reorganize ourselves internally. We are starting to gather up all of those pieces of ourselves that have been moved, expelled externally. There's a Kabbalistic teaching that creation is like, God was like a whole mirror, a mirror that was just intact, and then creation was like a shattering of the mirror. And so we have, God is everywhere. God is the world. God is everything. God is within us, but it's disorganized, it's scattered, it's shattered. So when we transmute, we are little by little reorganizing, regathering all of those little shards, all those little pieces, or what we would call the ego, consciousness, and all of our essence separated and into multiplicity. We're gathering that back up, reunifying it, and offering it, bringing it back to our being. That is the process. And this nourishes the tree of life, and it enlightens the tree of life. It allows the tree of life, the being, to become illuminated within us. So that's a very brief Kabbalistic understanding. We transmute because, or I should say, another reason we transmute is in accordance with the initiatic process. So there's initiatic purpose to transmutation, and in relation to the three factors of the revolution of the consciousness. In relation to mystical death, transmutation is crucial. Transmutation allows us to die in the ego. First of all, by drying up the source of nourishment for the ego, by redirecting the sexual waters towards the being. So we, in an unconscious way, our sexual waters, our sexual energy, our Mercury flows out into the duality of our mind, of our conflicts, of our anxieties, of just our day-to-day stuff, of just trying to get everything done, and boom, the day's over, and our particular values of our consciousness have all been moved externally. which is feeding it. It's feeding that as a pattern. It's feeding the ego by reinforcing that. When we transmute, it starts to dry up that nourishment by watering that tree of life internally. It is denying some of that nourishment and water to the ego. And so the ego can't act as uninhibited, I guess, as it could before. When we start to dry up the nourishment for the ego, then the ego sometimes will then rear its ugly head and we have to confront it a little bit more, but it's fighting because it's losing strength. So on a basic level, the transmutation allows us to die in the ego for that reason. And it also, very importantly, transmutation connects us with our divine mother, our divine mother death. She is the sexual energy. The divine mother is, she is energy, she is matter, she is the sexual energy, she is the kundalini that is latent within us, and she is that force that dismantles and destroys the ego and is able to extract the essence from within it. And transmutation is just so important for connecting with our divine mother. Transmutation allows the soul to be born within us. So alchemical birth through sexual alchemy. Transmutation allows the birth of the virtues of the being and the values of the being to exist in us, to be born in us, and to be perfected within us. Again, through the Divine Mother, through her movement, her process within us, and her facilitation of our initiatic path. And transmutation is that key. If we're not actively working to move the energy upward, if we're not actively connecting with the fact that the Divine Mother lives within us, within the sexual energy, then we're not moving through the initiations and we're not going to be giving birth to anything new within us. Transmutation allows for the sacrifice for humanity because of that ability for the unification of all our disparate parts within. And transmutation allows us to sacrifice with love and compassion. Again, with that capacity of the consciousness, that light, to see other people, see them for who they are, see them for the essence, feel them in that way, connect in that way, and then the love is just naturally there, and knowing what to do, knowing how to help, knowing whatever the particular circumstance would be, but it's going to come from a place of love. Sacrifice for humanity isn't necessarily going to always look a particular way for each person or at any given moment, but there's a flavor to it of giving up of our own will for the betterment of others in a really true way. And this is something that has to be guided by our being. You know, we need to learn how to sacrifice. And the more we're unified internally, the more we're organized internally. So just even back to just that basic, the three brains, the more that our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions, and our word are united, then the more we can be a vehicle for the being and the more that our sacrifice really has a positive impact. Transmutation is a way of life. It's that foundation of the Gnostic work. It's a natural way of being. It's possible when we first get introduced to it, we have an affinity with it. It may make sense, or it may feel like unusual or a struggle to do these practices, breathing exercises, or to self-observe, or to work with the sexual energy in this other way. But it's ultimately just a natural way of life, a natural way of being. Historically, back into, you know, the scope that Master Samael gives us of many epochs ago, the natural way of humanity was to be, the energy was just naturally transmuting. The trees of life within all of us were awake and alive. The being was awake and alive within us. And it was the fall that lost us that connection. And so just like, you know, when we fall back on anything, when we fall out of any kind of healthy physical habit just in our life, then we have to struggle a little bit to get back into it. Not that that becomes, I don't mean to say that transmutation becomes mechanical or it doesn't become habitual in a mechanical way, but like a daily discipline, like a daily habit that is just part of our spiritual and psychological health. And then also as we move in the world with that intention of being in the world and also being connected to our being and not sacrificing one for the other, or to put, should say, learning how to prioritize the being so that we can still stay open and connected in the world, have reciprocal relationships, you know, just be able to be in this world with people, with our lives, with our family, our friends, and be a source of consciousness that comes from our being. That's really where the sacrifice is. So working with transmutation as a way of life, it's going to be individual. It's never going to, like I say, it's never going to look a certain way necessarily, but we want to find that line where there's discipline, there's an effort made, but it's also feels natural, it feels good. Transmutation practice, it's pleasurable. I think that's something that's really good to connect with. And at least it's pleasant, at the very least it's pleasant, but it's also can be really pleasurable and really satisfying and really nice and good because we're working with a deep level of energy. We're working with the sexual energy and creating that feeling of lightness, moving out of that feeling of density, of heaviness, and that's joyful. It's pleasurable. So to let that help us when we find our motivation to want to make transmutation a way of life. Transmutation makes possible the opportunity for the Divine Mother to awaken as Devi Kundalini. Transmutation as a single person, it prepares us for the sexual alchemy with a spouse. And all of the things, you know, this talk isn't so much about sexual alchemy with the partner, with the spouse, but everything that I'm talking about completely applies to that work. So transmutation and love, that's completely a prerequisite for working alchemically with a partner. And even though I'm not speaking specifically to that, that is going to be everything I'm talking about completely applies. And regardless of our situation, we all have our own practices. We all have our own obligation to our work, our own particular relationship with our own being. And so we all have our own individual Divine Mother. And the more that we can work with love, then we can fulfill that wonderful almost koan that Samael talks about in The Perfect Matrimony, to have a partnership where one loves more and one loves better. And we start by loving more and loving better within ourselves. Transmutation can be observed in nature. So we can look to nature to learn about transmutation. There's this really nice quote from Master Samael. He says, "See how the water of a puddle in the road gradually evaporates under the heat from the sun and becomes clouds, and ultimately energy, lightning, and thunder. All the water from the seas and the rivers becomes clouds, and finally lightning and thunder, that is energy. The same thing happens with the ens seminis." What does one understand by ens seminis? The entity of the semen, the seminal liquor, or in other words, the sacred sperm. And again, just to clarify that the sperm always refers to, when Master Samael speaks about it, as the sexual energy in both men and women. So it's really lovely to see in nature the transmutation process that happens just with water and with clouds. So water in the liquid state is, as we talked about, our mercury, our internal sexual waters, and it's like an aquifer which we draw our basic vital energy. This is talked about really nicely in Taoist medicine and Taoist teachings, where they refer to the sexual energy as the sea of energy or the sea of qi. And all of the medicine is based on how the different organs of the body will draw their energy from the sea of qi. So we have this aquifer, this deep well of water, our sexual waters, from which we draw our basic vital energy, which we use basically either for life, for horizontal activities, or for creating that vertical line of the being, that internal tree of life. That's a really basic way of explaining the work. And so in normal life, the sexual waters, they're not particularly drawn upon, or I should say they're not purified, they're not elevated, they're not transmuted, they're just drawn upon for use. It's just like going to the well every day and just drawing water out to just use for our lives. So over time, the vital energy is naturally dissipated through physical activity, through mental, emotional, and sexual discharge. That is how we use up our vital values, our vital energy. When we do our transmutation practices, so we're combining our breath, willpower, visualization, devotion, prayer, you know, various practices, we start to heat the water It starts to transform and it starts to vaporize. And so it clarifies the water. And that water as vapor moves up our spine and it gathers in the higher centers as clouds, as vapor. And physically, we're seeing this. So we see that clouds are collections of water vapors. It rises from different bodies of water, rivers, lakes, streams, oceans. And the vapor is lighter, it's ethereal, it can drift, it can expand, it moves in ways that water doesn't. So it's still kind of fundamentally the same elements, the same molecules, but it's in a different state. It's a transmuted state, and then it has different properties. And also clouds are going to be more purified. It's a more purified version of the water. The water may have different, you know, may have turbidity, it may have different impurities within it. And then when it's in that vaporized cloud state, then it's purified. The clouds are transmuted water. And so it's just a nice thing to observe in nature, just seeing the clouds and reflecting on that. And again, to reiterate just that transmutation is natural. It happens in nature in an observable way. And it's part of how life and nature operates, or it's part of how life continues, I should say. So once we have clouds and they gather and they start to gather up and increase in density and condense into rain, and rain, of course, is life-giving, cleansing, it nourishes all the plants, the animals, all the living things. And then just while we're talking about water, so water can also be in the solid form. It can be as ice. And ice is like an energetic potential. So it's kind of like water in a static state, but it must be heated into liquid or vapor to become usable. So we really do need this heat. There could be aspects of our sexual waters that are like ice. There could be aspects of our sexual waters that are just really turbid and really not clean. And so when we apply these practices, these transmutation practices, we're applying heat. And heat in the esoteric work comes from efforts, it comes from will, and it comes from the intensity of love and inspiration. Breath work can generate heat. So we often use breath work in the transmutation practices to move the energy. And so we have this heat of our love, of our efforts, of our inspiration, and that melts the ice. If, you know, aspects of our sexual waters are in that cold, static, stuck ice format, it starts to melt it. It starts to move these things. It could be our stuck emotions, egoic patterns, our stagnant sexual waters. It starts to become more liquid. It starts to flow. We start to have movement in these aspects of our lives, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. And then continually applying these practices, this heat, then the water starts to evaporate and it starts to move and it moves up the spinal column. And this is a joy. It's a rare opportunity to be able to practice these types of things in the context of teaching that really clarifies the goals of why we're doing that, the aim, the purpose. There's certainly breathing practices and different things and other kinds of traditions, but sometimes you may not understand totally the why of it. But to know that we can work with these practices that are joyful, that are moving, starting to circulate our energies on many different levels. It helps us with physical health, emotional health, psychological health, and starts to create the spiritual life within us, starts to water our internal spiritual garden. It's really amazing. You know, often in just, you know, sometimes in speech we'll say, we'll talk about Eden like paradise, or, you know, that was just like, wow, it was like paradise. It was like Eden. And of course, Eden was the biblical paradise. But the word Eden, the ancient Aramaic word Eden, means well-watered place. So Eden, heaven, nirvana, paradise, refers to, somebody else says that it refers to the fourth dimension, which is a higher, finer dimension, which we access within ourselves when we are vibrating at a more subtle level. So through meditation practice, of course, through transmutation, we raise our vibration, we vibrate at a subtler level, and we're actually in a higher state. We're actually, to the extent of our concentration, of our state of meditation, we are in Eden. We are in paradise. And so that's where that joy and that pleasure from transmutation comes from. We're actually vibrating at this other dimension. It's interesting too to look at artwork and sacred artwork, and we see clouds, you know, in a depiction of heaven, maybe even in our imagination, but also certainly in artwork. Like heaven is, it's in the clouds, it's up in the clouds, and, you know, and God, if depicted, you know, different religions may or may not depict God as, you know, in an anthropomorphic way, but often God is just clouds or light streaming through the clouds. I like to do Google image searches for different things. Sometimes if you just do a Google image search for God, it'll just be clouds, and beautiful pictures of clouds with light streaming through it. So this is really wonderful when we think about it from a transmutation perspective. Like, we are generating more consciousness by moving and vaporizing our sexual waters to create a state of heaven within us, where the being can be, you know, within this the state that we're creating. It's really interesting. So God, the being, can communicate with us more, help us more, work through us when the consciousness is awakened in this place with these clouds. And this is not like clouds, like our vision is clouded, or, you know, sometimes we say clouded, like blocked or something. It's actually the clouds provide an appropriate form for the mystery of the being. So we may not see God with our physical eyes in the clouds, but internally, God is there because God is a mystery. And we will never see God with our physical eyeballs. That's not what it's about. It's about that faith and that mystery. And the more that we do the work, even the more we understand the teachings and understand the conceptual framework of this work, which is profound, we are still always moving more and more into a mystery. So, yeah, so I love that image of the clouds, where it's actually clouding our visual sense, our third dimensional materialistic sense, so that we can commune more with the mystery of being. So yeah, start to check out artwork in that. And also in Buddhist art, and depictions of nirvana, there's always really lovely stylized clouds with, you know, Buddhas and different beings, you know, resting or riding on clouds, and nirvana is always up in the clouds. So clouds ultimately make heaven and nirvana invisible to those with the consciousness asleep. That's what the cloud is. But when we're working more with the transmutation, appreciating what that means, then what is invisible becomes visible because of the consciousness. All right, I'm going to speak about different practices for transmutation. This is just sort of a way of compiling different practices to understand them. We may already know this. We may only think of transmutation as just one or two practices. So I want to speak about it a little bit, and then we'll go into a practice after that. Okay. So in the Gnostic work, we have different practices for sexual transmutation, and they're generally combining breath with willpower, with prayer, often with mantras. And we combine this with our superior emotion to elevate our sexual energy. That's basically the definition of the kinds of practices that Master Samael teaches. So some of the practices that are transmutation practices are the runic practices. And Master Samael wrote a book called The Magic of the Runes. And these are postures that are taken, and they combine a particular intention, so our willpower, along with breath, a mantra, a prayer, and then, and like I said, then our body is in a particular, very specific posture. And some of these are transmutational. So that means when we breathe in, we breathe, when we inhale, we are intentionally drawing our sexual energy up and then performing the mantra or the prayer or whatever. So runes can be transmutational. And this isn't a talk. I don't have time to go into all the runes. And there's other talks on karate where they've done a wonderful job of talking about the runes. So we can use runic practices when we're trying to elevate our state. So prayer itself is concentrating the intention on God. It's concentrating our mind on our being, on God, in whatever particular form that is. And when our mind is concentrated on the divine, then our energy follows. So a prayer devotional state actually moves the sexual energy to a certain extent. So there is an aspect of prayer that is transmutational. We can certainly do other practices that are more specifically for moving the sexual energy, but prayer is elevating our energy. It's concentrating our attention, and our attention is our consciousness, which comes from our sexual energy. Related to that is devotion. So devotion, just purely loving God. And sometimes this is just spontaneous, which is really, really a lovely experience. Sometimes it's a particular practice dedicated to devotion. Like, okay, in my work right now, I know I need to work more with devotion and having that intention. We can have devotional singing or chanting. So there's a lot of really beautiful sacred chants, sacred songs, and that can be like a mantra, but it's like a singing, and that is transmutational. And with the attention concentrated on our being and having love there for our being, it can bring about a state of like a state of ecstasy, a state of samadhi. Mantras are, again, similar to devotional singing or chanting. There's tons of different mantras, but they help concentrate the mind, channel the sexual energy. And there's certain mantras that are particularly helpful for transmutation that Master Samael suggested. E-A-O, with the vowels, with those prolonged. Kandil, Bandil, Rrr, is a really good one. And also the mantra O-A-O, Kakof, Na, Kon, Sa, with all of the syllables prolonged, is helpful to bring about transmutation. Some of the practices that we might be most familiar with from Gnosis are pranayama. So pranayama means breath work in Sanskrit. And there's lots of different kinds of pranayama in the yogic and Vedic traditions, but Master Samael primarily taught two types, Hamsa pranayama and Egyptian Christic pranayama. And these are what we generally practice in the context of our meditation, and it's combining our willpower, our breath, and visualization to specifically achieve the movement of the sexual energy and the transmutation of the sexual energy. All of these are really powerful. All of these different types of practices work. We're often combining them, you know, so even though I say prayer over here and mantra, often we're combining prayer, devotional intention with mantras, with pranayama. But it can be useful, I think, just to feel and to know that, you know, even just in a moment of sincere prayer, we're transmuting a little bit. And if we're maybe wanting to specifically focus and to do a really strong and intentional transmutation, then we might want to do a pranayama practice. All right, so that's the end of my talk. So thank you all for listening. And I would like to do a practice. So I'll go ahead and guide the practice. It'll just be not too long, but definitely want to work with this since we've been talking about it so much. Okay, so wherever we're at right now, if we're in a place where we can sit and be still and have a meditation practice, that's great. So we can close the eyes, that's great. If we're occupied doing something else, then that's fine. You know, can concentrate on what we're doing. If we're driving or something like that, that's fine too. But just wherever we're at, just try to find a place of stillness within. We can close the eyes. Start to bring our awareness within. Checking in with ourselves, observing ourselves. Noticing our particular emotional state, just noticing it. Noticing any particular thoughts that are going through our mind, any dialogue, any stream of association. Noticing how our body feels, any particular tension or stress in the body. So just bringing ourselves into the present moment with where we're at. Now start to become aware of the breath. You can take a few deep breaths to help settle the mind. And we can just try to find that relaxation, letting go of tension, letting go of thoughts, letting go of any persistent mood or emotional state, just trying to find that equilibrium within, that place of stillness, of silence. And starting to find within ourselves that motivation to transmute the energies. Might be something that we felt inspired or reminded of in the talk. Might just be just from a previous experience of transmuting before, knowing that it was beneficial for our work. Might not even be something we can articulate. Just finding that motivation, that yearning to be more conscious, to be more subtle, to be more internalized. So in a moment, we'll do a very simple version of pranayama practice. And what we'll do is, on a deep inhale, imagine that we're drawing the sexual waters up the spine in form of vapor. So we can feel, visualize our sexual waters and our sexual center and our sexual organs, our glands, as like an aquifer, a water table, a well, source of our vital energy. And as we inhale, we can imagine that effort, that breath, is causing that water to heat up and to evaporate, to vaporize, and to float and move up the spine, up our body, up into the brain, where it gathers its clouds. And in the exhale, we can use the mantra sa, like a soft sigh, where the clouds become rain down into the heart. So again, on the inhale, we'll do a deep inhale, moving the waters, heating the waters to become vapor, moving up the body, up the spine, raining down into the heart, nourishing the heart. So we can all do this at our own pace. Start to even feel a little bit of heat in the body. It's really important. It's really helpful. The heat of the breath, of the efforts, is that heat that moves the water, that can melt the ice, can purify the impurities, start to bring up the sexual waters as steam, as vapor. Keep working with the practice, a deep inhale, bring the energy up, see it gathering as clouds. As the clouds gather, it creates the perfect pure environment for more consciousness, more essence, for the being to be. With the exhale, the clouds gather and they become pure rain. Rains down into our heart, nourishes our hearts, nourishes the garden of our hearts. Mind starts to wander, start to associate onto different thoughts, dialogues, commentaries. Just bring it back to the practice, visualizing, feeling that water, your sexual waters, everything that has been stuck there, negative emotions, negative experiences, and we can heat it, we can purify it with our intentions. Water, the mercury is meant to flow within us, to move, to not be stagnant and stuck. So we're bringing about internal movement, internal flow, bringing about relaxation. Relaxation is the opposite of tension and stuckness. So just allow the waters to move, the steam to move up the body, clouds to be there, a little aspect of Eden, of Nirvana, rain gently going down into the heart. Do the practice slowly if it helps you with the visualization, or do it a little more continuously as long as you can stay relaxed and concentrated. Whatever our body needs right now to move the energy. Letting go of thoughts, letting go of the turbidity, the impurities of negative emotions, feeling stuck, feeling stagnant, feeling dense, heavy. This energy, the sexual waters, doesn't belong to us. belongs to the being. When we work with it, it helps us. It helps our lives. It helps our work. Okay, on the next exhale, just pause. Just take a mental inventory, or I should say an inventory with our self-observation of our state. So that was just a few minutes of working with transmutation. Just notice, do we feel even a little bit less distracted? Do we feel a little bit lighter? In every sense of the word, a little bit more centered. These practices really work on so many levels. So the breath is helpful, deep breathing is helpful, meditation aspect, all of that, but it's also really working on a spiritual level that is so profound because it's combining the sexual energy, the sexual aspect with the spiritual yearnings. And when those things are separate, we have a lot of suffering. We lose touch with the spiritual aspect. We don't have that light. We don't have that inspiration. And without the sexual energy, we're just not in touch with the reality of our lives. So the union, the practice of the sexuality, spirituality, is the work, and it's a joyful work, and it's where we generate love, we practice love, and we're able to work with love ultimately. All right, so we can finish the practice. Kept it short and sweet, so hopefully you all feel like you wish it was longer and you'll continue with your transmutation practices. You'll work with the practices in your centers, in Master Samael, in the books that he gives, the practices that he gives. And yeah, and I just thank you all for listening, for participating. And at this point, I can answer any questions or any clarifications anyone needs, or if there's any comments, go ahead and submit them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Carly. So we'll go ahead and take a short break, and we'll be back with any questions from our listeners. Okay, so we are back. We've got several questions here that we have pasted onto the chat, Carly. So if you want to go ahead and read the questions and answer them.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks everyone who sent in questions. It was great. We got four questions here. So I'll try to just, I mean, I want to keep it concise, but I want to try to address what people were asking here. Okay. So one person wrote in and said, I remember when I first started doing pranayama exercises, I would lose my energy in dreams. This has stopped, thankfully. Do you know why this was occurring? Okay, so I guess I would just respond, you know, it's really because we are revolutionizing our energies and our consciousness and our approach and everything that happens in Gnosis, it basically takes time. You know, it takes some time and some years in Gnosis and realize that not everything is going to happen just, you know, when we get introduced to the teachings, not everything's just going to happen in like 6 months or something like that. So it takes time to reorganize the energies, to unite, you know, our interests and excitement and appreciation of Gnosis with the actual physical habits of our body, of the physical habits of our sexual energy. And, you know, so I think, you know, we can start the practices and still have these situations where the unconsciousness comes in and an ego comes in and loses the energy in dreams, just because we're still kind of in process, and we're always in process really, but those kinds of things. And I mean, those types of occurrences of losing the energy in different ways, the unconsciousness coming in, it is always like a danger or a temptation on the path. So I'd say, yeah, it's just part of the process. That the fact that it stopped, that's great. You know, that's obviously progress. And we just keep working, and we just keep finding those challenges and temptations in higher and higher octaves, basically. So thank you for that question. I hope that helps you. We've got another question here that says, many Gnostic couples try to transmute during the night in the Arcanum AZF, but in their day-to-day interaction with the world, they do not transform lustful impressions received, nor do they lead a proper life. Can these couples still advance in their inner work, or is this a form of self-deception? So I don't know if this is a generalization or referring to a particular situation, but I can just address very generally just the thing, and this is something that we all would be confronting and working with, whether we're working in a couple or single or anything. When we're transmuting the energy, and especially when we're working with sexual alchemy, we really have to make sure and make certain that we're working with the death practices. So making sure that we are working with transmutation, working with sexual alchemy in a state of self-remembering, in a state of devotion, state of humility, remembering the being, remembering the purpose, and then in our lives also remembering that. So that's why I say making transmutation a way of life is also about withdrawing that nourishment from the ego as a way of life, which is another way of saying self-observation, self-remembering, and really being as conscious as possible of the unconsciousness. So if there is, the way this question is worded, it sounds, you know, it's describing a situation where there's sexual alchemy being practiced and then not a psychological work being applied. And so what Samael would say is that that is in danger of creating a hanasmushin, where there's a spiritual birth process without a death of the ego. And so there's a double center of gravity. So that's something that we work against through working in the mystical death, through just being really honest with ourselves, through prayer, and through making sure that we have all three factors balanced in our practice and our work. Okay, we've got another question here. It says, mainstream international yoga schools teach different varieties of pranayama exercises. Is there a danger in doing the wrong type of pranayama, as it to fall into an exercise that is not transmuting the Christic force, as with white tantra versus black tantra? Okay, I would say, and this is something I've thought about a lot over the time in Gnosis. So where I'm at now is I do feel like exercise is not transmutational, but exercise and, you know, types of exercises, maybe more like yoga and tai chi, can be really helpful to just kind of for the health of the physical body. And then these, you know, yoga and tai chi in particular, because they often use breath work and are a little bit more refined types of exercises, it can help kind of move the energy in a very general way. I would not say that these are transmutation exercises or practices, but exercises can be really helpful. And so that's fine. And there's different types of traditional pranayama. It's an ancient practice with a wide diversity of practices and different traditions that, like, Samael didn't utilize, that I can't even speak about because I don't necessarily know. But I'm just aware that there's many different kinds of breathing practices and pranayama taught in modern yoga. And I would say if a particular breathing practice is helpful and you find it helpful for just your general meditation, your general health, your general well-being, wellness, like that's fine. Perhaps the danger could be is if we start to feel like just pranayama or just a particular yoga school is going to bring about our self-realization, in which case that is a misunderstanding of the teachings or misinterpretation. But if we're solid in our transmutation and our practice and we know how it affects us and how it brings about balance, then and we're at a yoga class and they're doing a different type of pranayama, we could observe the effects of it on ourselves and see, you know, I don't see any reason to 100% avoid it. I think we can all just responsibly observe the effects of it on ourselves. That's a little bit my opinion, but that would be my way of saying that to practice pranayama from a modern yoga school, I wouldn't categorize it as Black Tantra. Other instructors may feel differently. Okay. And then the last question that we have, so this is from Brett, and he says, are there practices to focus the sexual energy to heal physical injuries? Okay. So Samael has a book on healing called Occult Medicine and Practical Magic that has many wonderful, wonderful practices in there. It's mostly focusing on kind of plant spirit medicine, so working with the elemental or the spiritual aspect of different plants to heal all sorts of things. And he gets pretty specific. He has specific ailments in there, specific organs. And so I could point you towards that if you're looking for esoteric information on healing specific issues. Yeah, I couldn't name a particular practice to focus the sexual energy to heal a physical injury, other than just to say that doing the work, transmuting to a degree, to an extent, does heal us physically because it's harmonizing us. So any kind of injury or issue that's occurring from a really deep inner, inner conflict, overthinking, having our thoughts and our actions and our mind disconnected, having our lives not in balance, not being present, not able to relax, just the general chaos that our life, just the world of sleep that we live in, that kind of engenders, then transmuting in general helps that. And then through our own initiatic process, sometimes we have opportunities to heal things because we have reached a higher level of being. Sometimes physical ailments are things that we have to bear just because of our own initiatic process. So it's very, very particular. I encourage people to seek out healing in different ways, in whatever ways that feel right, go to the doctor, whatever you need. And then first and foremost, and then also to explore Master Samael's book on occult medicine and practical magic, and then see where you're at. And then also, of course, pray, meditate on it, ask your being what the significance of this issue is, if there's a way to heal it, work with the masters of medicine. So it's more of a general answer just because I think it's a little bit, I think healing is a very big topic. And I think healing physically and that relationship to the esoteric process is a big topic. And I think it's good to address it from all the angles, seek out physical healing and seek out esoteric healing for your particular need. All right. I think that was all the questions. So thanks everyone. I'm really, really glad that you wrote in for these questions. These are really good, really useful. I hope that I was able to offer some different perspective, offer some inspiration to keep working with our transmutation practice. And thank you so much to the karate team for having me on. Thank you, Elio and Annabelle.
Thank you, Carly. And we are looking to see if there are any more questions. We don't want to forget anybody. Let me just check the chat here. So, no. Okay, well, as always with this topic, Carly, there's a lot of people who hold back because it's, it has to do with the sexual energy, and maybe they might have questions that they would want to consult, I guess, directly, privately, maybe. So we'll just put that out. If they wish to contact you, that they can contact you directly.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
All right. So email us and we'll go ahead and forward the email to Carly, and then you can answer to them.
Okay. Yeah, I'd be glad to do that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. everyone for your questions and for tuning in to our live activity. Carly, once again, thank you also for all your help and contributions to Coradi Radio.
You're welcome.
We'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Our next live activity is August 25th. And tune in. Take care.